I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Outer Sanctum is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respect to their elders past and present.
Good plan, good plan. Who thought of this one?
You're listening to the Outer Sanctum podcast.
Here is a moment in time in the history of the AFL.
In from the side, Houghton. She was surrounded by blue jumpers.
Sing this song to you. Should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the red and the blue.
Welcome to the Outer Sanctum for another week. My name is Emma Race and I am thrilled to be running onto the field, arms stretched wide in a huge group hug to celebrate the end of the AFLM season with my football finals loving best brains in the biz, super smart Sanctum sisters, broadcasters and bra burners. I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Nicole Hayes.
Hi, I'm Kate Sear.
Hi, I'm Shelley Ware.
Hi, I'm Julia Chiara.
Hi, it's Lucy Race.
Hello, it's Rana Hussein.
Hi, it's Alicia Sometimes and I'm pumped.
Alicia in the house. She's come back on for grand final week like the superstar she is, and Rana wearing her Melbourne scarf. We're going to get to all of your feels and I cannot wait to do it, but football proved this weekend that, in the words of Motley Crue, it can kickstart my heart even when it's miles away. We send commiserations to the Dogs fans who are listening and acknowledge how tough it is to be on the receiving end of a drought breaker. To the D's fans, and there are just so many of you who listen, and I won't name them all, but huge and special shout outs to Miffy, Cheryl, Kat, Kate, Sue, Nikki and Dan. It's just been the most epic season for you. The game had it all. 61,000 fans in Perth, 57 years for the D's, dramatic lead changes, fairy tale endings, hearts beating true on the couches in lockdown. I want to hear what your highlights were, ladies. Rana, I'm going to come to you first.
Oh, man. How can I give you one highlight? My heart is bursting. I couldn't concentrate today at work. I am so annoying in the chat group. All I want to talk about is that game. I will say, when you first said what was my highlight, I have to say the steely look in Christian Petrarca's eyes. He just had that look of someone who was determined, who was ready to go, even at the start of the third quarter when it looked like maybe Western Bulldogs were going to get the better of them. All of them had it, but Christian especially had that look that he just was going to go out and smash this game, and then he did, and I can't get that look out of my head. It's amazing, and I'm going to take that into my day job, I reckon.
Christian Petrarca and the combination with Luke Jackson was like a tinderbox that went off. Julia, you actually had a fair bit of skin in the game too, because your partner is a long-suffering D. What did you make of it?
It was such a good game, but for me, yes, my partner is a long-suffering D, but she doesn't really invest. But my mum is a long-suffering D, and I actually got a phone call from her on the Sunday, so excited, gave me a huge rundown of the game. I knew she was such a D, but I didn't realize how invested she was, and I had a chat to her today, and I just wanted to say a little bit of her story, if that's okay. My mum came to Australia in 1953 as a three-year-old from Abruzzo in Italy. She originally went to boarding school where the Collingwood Children's Farm is right now, and eventually she went back to Paran in 1955, where the reason she became a Melbourne supporter was that in her street there were some country boys who were Melbourne players, and that was her entree into footy. But for a long time it was Ron Barassi who was her childhood crush, teenage crush, and I checked with her today, is her still current crush. And she watched the game with her framed Ron Barassi jersey sitting underneath the TV. My dad's a Pies member and she's a Demons member, and for the last however long, you know, they go to each other's games. So my dad would be sitting in the Melbourne members with his Pies scarf on, and my mum would do the reverse. So I'm pretty thrilled for her that she's been able to watch a premiership where the number 31 kicks 6 goals.
That is the beauty of these footy stories. Nicole, as a storyteller, you must have just been licking your chops. What was your highlight?
Oh, gosh. As we've already said, there are so many. But you can't, if you think about like midway through that third quarter, it really did look like the Dogs are running or going to run away with it. They had all the momentum. They were just playing their best football for the day. And then in those last, I think it's like under 4 minutes, but the final 2 minutes, there were 4 goals kicked in 50 seconds by the Demons and completely turned the game around. You could feel it shifting that way, but it was back and forth for ages. And then Ben Brown gets held and gets a kick, a set shot in front of goal. Then the Petrarca dribble, which was poetry in motion. And then you've got Sparrow the belter from the centre. It just, like every kind of kick that everybody wants to sort of, they dream that they're going to get, there was one of each. And then Oliver, another one just from outside 50. And he, you know, that's with 10 seconds left or something ridiculous. So how can you go past 4 goals in 50 seconds?
It's extraordinary. And when we think about the drought-breaking stories, I think all eyes now turn to St Kilda. Alicia, your family will be feeling that given that you've got some Saints fans in your DNA. You watched the game. Does it give you hope that that day's coming?
Yeah. Well, my dad is one of those supporters who absolutely hates the team just as much as he loves the team. So if Collingwood's playing, he wants them to lose so much. And so he was going for the Dogs because the D's win and all of a sudden the harsh reality hits. And he has been really sad the last few days and he's thinking about all his memories in black and white and he just wants to see, you know, an HD, you know, non-COVID grand final where he gets to hug and cry at the wing. And I thought of Rana or all of us being there. And I know that I'm the James Jordan of this group because I get a premiership medallion, but I didn't actually sort of play on ground this year.
But Julia hates that.
Yeah. This is for you, Julia. But the 43-point turnaround in 16 minutes are just like Nicole said, just that the quick pace of it. But you know in your heart of hearts when you're watching a game and you think, do I really care about this? Sometimes you intellectually say, look, I'm going for Melbourne. But I was sitting with someone who just barracked for Treloar. They didn't barrack for the Bulldogs or anything, just Treloar. But in my heart of hearts, I was going for the D's and I jumped up on the couch and I was screaming and I was weeping. And so I was a D supporter, and to be transformed like that is such a great gift.
It sure is. Shelley, you had loved ones who didn't quite make it into the team having been D's for a very long time. It's a really bitter pill to swallow when you don't get the call up. How did you see this game?
Well, I've actually only just stopped crying. So thanks for mentioning that again. But yeah, I've been crying for the last week and a half for the fact that Neville Jetta didn't get a go in this grand final. It's been difficult, very difficult, as he is very loved by our family and one of our family. So it's been hard to watch, but it is what happens in this game. And that's why I think everyone should get a medal, Julia. But even more so this season, more than ever, I've felt that. And I think it is just because we love him so much. It's been very, very, very difficult. But I was very proud of the way that he held himself in the moment, before, during and after. He's just a champion of a human. My highlight after I stopped crying was the fact that it was the best game for some of these players that they played all year. You know, we had Brayshaw, French, Petrarca, Brown playing their best games of the year in the grand final. I absolutely love that. Big game players, you know. And, you know, Petrarca, 40 possessions in the grand final. You know, he was just outstanding and definitely that steel look was there. There's no question of that. That was the game highlight. But I think what I loved and absolutely loved the most, and it hasn't left my memory, and I mentioned it in our group chat, was when I saw Brayshaw just quietly going down and getting the confetti and wrapping it in his jumper and tucking it into his shorts because I knew that he wanted to take it home as a keepsake. That has literally just stayed. So you're all making me cry. I never cry. This is too emotional, this grand final. But that is like literally just stayed with me for the last few days of this young man just wanting to treasure every moment.
Yeah, there were some beautiful scenes. Katie, you're a romantic footy heart. What stayed with you?
Oh, all of the above. I loved it. There was so much to recommend it. And as a, you know, as a neutral, I mean, I was going for the D's, but I would have been happy for the Dogs to win it too. And as a neutral, I just wanted a good game. And gosh, it was a good game. Like, it was amazing and seesawing. And so many times I thought, you know, I felt confident that the game was over and I thought the D's were going to win. Then I thought the Dogs had it and the D's had it. And that's how I want football to be, actually. I want it to be exciting and to keep you guessing. And obviously in the end, you know, the D's really blew them away, but that was exciting for its own reasons too. I just want to mention something outside the game, the pre-match entertainment. I thought it was great. And I just want to say that I want Baker Boy to perform at everything all the time, always. There is a bit of a campaign kicking off for Baker Boy to represent Australia at Eurovision, and I want everybody to get behind that because I think that would be amazing. But yeah, for me, it's just the stories of, you know, as you've all been describing, the stories of people who followed the game for a long time and sharing in that collective joy, I guess. And in the long wait for the game to start, I went for a walk with my dog, and in the street over from us, you know, there was a house that had heaps of D's memorabilia outside, balloons and flags and things hanging. And there was an older gent in the front yard, and he stopped and, you know, talked to me, and he was decked out in D's gear, and it was lovely because I asked him first of all how he was feeling and if he was nervous, and he said, "No, I'm not. I've had a few stubbies to calm my nerves, and I'm just easing my way into it." But he then told me that he was 12 years old when the D's last won, and he became very emotional and started crying as he recalled that to me and how he remembered his dad, who has now passed away, watching the game and screaming, jumping up and down in the lounge room 57 years ago. And it's stories like that that I love. I love that, and that collective joy. And, you know, actually, I've never met him before, but when they won, I thought of him and all of those other people who have these connections to family and friends and people they're remembering and stuff. And yeah, it was just great and fabulous to see the D's get up.
It was a long wait. It was like a long dramatic labour, the wait for it all to kick in at the end of the day, the transitions. Ben Brown's goal was like when the shoulders finally come through the birthing canal and all of a sudden it was on, and we thought we're going to get delivered something precious here. And luckily we had an experienced midwife in Daisy Pierce guiding us through it with her expertise. Our eyes, of course, will now turn to AFLW, where Lucy, you are a D through and through in the AFLW. You were wearing your scarf watching the game. Did it feel like your step club-in-law's boyfriend was winning a grand final?
Yeah, it really did. And I'd hung my scarf in the window just as so that cars going past could see that we were a house that was barracking for the Demons. And it says on it, AFLW member, and I'm pretty proud to wear it. Thinking about the heritage of both of those clubs with women's football just makes me love them more. I became a true fan. I wore it. And when the Bulldogs were coming, I retied it. I thought of Kate Sear and said, "What would she do here?" And so I moved my scarf around, and turns out it really helped. You know, there was so much on field to really celebrate. Ben Brown, somebody who I thought had such a great game, was Christian Salem. And he just, in the last half of the game, I thought just played out of his skin. I loved watching it. But for me, I came back to the song and I kept thinking about that line, "Should old acquaintance be forgot?" And what that really means is it's a call to remember those long-standing relationships. And I felt that that was just the story of the day, that I was seeing so many people talking about friends that they wished they could watch the game with. I saw somebody on Twitter who had put out their dad's jacket and tie that he wore when he went to watch the Demons, and they tucked a little photo of their dad and mum in the top pocket because neither of them were still here, and sat watching the game with that jacket. And it reminded me of the article you wrote, Rana, about the ties that we have between family and our loves and our heart and football. And that meant a lot to me. The other thing about that song, the other thing about having Auld Lang Syne in that Melbourne song, is that it's a song about endings and beginnings. And I think this was the end of a particular era of the Demons, which has been a tough one. And there's been, you know, many, many, many tough and cold days sitting in the outer watching your team lose. But I really feel that we might be at the start of a new beginning of what might be a dynasty, who knows? But I think the D's of 2022 are going to be hard to beat. And with eight players under 21, I wonder if they'll be able to go back to back and give their fans a grand final and a premiership at the G.
There was a really beautiful through line in what the D's were doing, which was all about being yourself. And I think it was a conversation that Simon Goodwin had been having with them all season. And I really felt like I saw that represented by the players and even by Simon Goodwin himself. I was intrigued to see a coach participate so much in the confetti moments and in the selfies and all that kind of stuff. Is that what you know of him, Rana?
No, not at all. And maybe the players do and we just haven't seen it. But Simon Goodwin doesn't smile. I don't know that I've seen him smile all that much. And I think actually Kate Roffey, I saw an interview where Kate Roffey said that when the chips were down and people were questioning Simon Goodwin and his ability to coach, Kate Roffey did say to him, be yourself, the players love you. And you could see that on Saturday night and since in the celebrations. And I absolutely loved it. But another thing that really got me was, in terms of being yourself, was there was a point in the game where the players could see that they'd won a premiership and they were just enjoying playing the game. And Christian Petrarca is known to be a bit of a larrikin and gets up and about, and he was celebrating and quite visibly. And Stephen May was saying to him, no, get your head back in the game. I just thought that that was so beautiful, two players being themselves. For Stephen May, it was like, no, 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 the job's not done. And Christian was like, no, I'm going to smile and celebrate. I just thought that was beautiful.
It was hilarious. The pregame and the omens, we have to get to it because it really is our bread and butter here. Alicia, you wrote an absolutely beautiful poem, which we'll play later in the show. How did you feel about how musos and music and Australian music was represented? I feel like they're really trying to warm us up for a night grand final to always be the norm.
It's so funny you should say that because, I mean, listening to us just absolutely celebrate the D's as we should, we're sort of not, you know, downplaying the Bulldogs a little bit. And in 2016, we were just jumping for joy the same way we are now. And it's that thing that, you know, we're always going for the underdogs. And sometimes we as Victorians or Melburnians just think the MCG is hallowed ground and it's the absolute home of football. So to see it so beautifully done at Perth Stadium was just such a lovely thing. And I think to celebrate Australian music was incredible at a time when so many Australian musicians are absolutely suffering, put to the background. It isn't a choice between music, literature, and sport, is it? To some people out there in Twitter land, you can love both. And I think that it is one of those things that just to see it celebrated that way, and, you know, some notes didn't hit and some notes just rocked. And I was really, yeah, I was surprised at how emotional I was.
It was emotional. Also, unfortunately, Simon Goodwin didn't get to do a speech at the end of the presentation. I still want to hear from him. I don't know if anyone has heard from him yet. And also the Norm Smith being handed out, Julia, have you ever seen someone kick six in a grand final and not get best on?
No, but he had a few handed to him.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's rough. Like on any other day he would have, but if you look at the votes, you know, it was a unanimous BOG to Petrarca from all the voters, and then everyone else gave Fritsch second best on. So that's just how it is, I guess. And it would be hard to go past 40 touches and two goals.
For sure.
It's 39.
Oh, they took one away.
That was one of the things that really stood out to me was that the champion data did an audit and Petrarca lost a handball along the way and brought it down to 39. And while you think, well, quibbling over one possession, the difference was he equaled Simon Black's record rather than beating it. So it's a pretty key handball to miss out on. I thought that was quite, I don't know, I feel like that said something about the day. You know, there was so many, people were so caught up in the moment that, you know, emotion got a little ahead of reality, and next thing you know,
there were some big emotions sent to us via Twitter, and I just love the community of watching it on the couch with my mobile in my hand. Kate, you must have been all over it. There was a big omen at the start of the game. Massive. It probably hasn't been a bigger one, only the Collingwood banner tearing before the West Coast premiership.
Mm. Yeah. It's in the same ballpark. It's all part of the same thing. And indeed also that year where Richmond beat Adelaide and Adelaide's formation at the start of the game was off. So it was what I'm calling ribbon gate, which was and look, even as I say it, I just have to begin with the disclaimer that I really feel for whoever it was that prepared the cup and tied the ribbons on the cup, because they couldn't have known that this would happen. But yeah, what happened was that the cup ambassador, Glenn Jakovic, brought the cup out onto the ground. And, of course, this is at the start of the game. And, of course, on one handle you had the red and blue ribbons for Melbourne, and on the other you had the red, white and blue for the Bulldogs. And then he handed the cup to Gary Lyon and Chris Grant, who were going to, you know, one of them was going to present the cup to the winner. And the ribbon on the Western Bulldogs side slid down the handle. And Chris Grant, to his credit, noticed it, and I saw him putting his hand underneath and trying to push the ribbon back up, which I think, in my view, explains why the Dogs came back and hit the front. But it then slipped back down again, and you know, we saw that replicated in the way that the game ebbed and flowed. And I did say to you all on the text, and the moment it happened, there's an omen and it's ominous, and I think it was the decider. So I feel for the person who tied the ribbons on. I hope, you know, they're surrounded by a lot of support and loved ones. But in future years, we need to really make sure that those ribbons are tied on as tight as possible, because they're key.
Well, Kate, I think it's so serious that I propose there should be a royal commission into it.
Yes.
And
can I be the commissioner?
Sure. I'm legally fine with that.
I'm ready to roll.
But while we're at it, I'd also like a royal commission into the linking of the song by ABBA that was released in 1979 titled Gimme, 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 and its very strong association with both the AFLM and the AFLW. Because it's very strange. It's a song that only peaked at number 3. And that was in 1979. It's only 10th in the list of most popular ABBA songs. But we saw early in 2020, the Collingwood AFLW team put out what is quite a difficult to watch Insta story of them all singing it. With Brisbane, we saw the AFLW team. They were expected to lose, and they pre-game were in the sheds singing this song. They came out and beat Richmond. And then at the end of the grand final, we saw the men of the Melbourne football team jumping up and down singing it as well. So I'm not sure if it's a case of musical contagion. Granted, it is a banger. I would probably prefer they went with Madonna's Hung Up, which uses the sample, and that at least went to number 1. But because of just the seriousness of this, and I don't think we can ever take ABBA's association with football seriously enough. I think it's especially for someone like Emma, it could actually push her out of the game. So I thought, if you're going to get a statement on this, there's only 2 people that I could possibly turn to. When you think of football and music, who do you go to? You go to Rebecca Goddard. So I asked her for a statement and she said, basically, it's a bit of a mystery to me, and I'm quoting her here. She said, I'd never heard it in the change rooms before until I'd arrived at Hawthorn and the girls had it on their playlist. I think it's just one of those catchy tunes. And look, Beck usually can answer my questions. I felt like that didn't quite get to the crux of it. So I thought football, pop culture. I went to Darcy Vesio, and Darcy said, and this is a quote, it's an official quote from her, I feel like the song is perfect to sing as a group up to the skies, similar to It's Raining Men. The boys probably feeling a bit cheeky singing it too, letting their guards down, allowing themselves to break free of the footy stereotype. Could be said for the girls too.
Why are you not on special comments?
Me?
There's a royal commission coming for that. Julia, did you have something on this?
I don't
what I want to say is, are we just showing our collective age? Because they're not singing the ABBA song. Rana, you're the youngest person here. What are they actually singing?
No, I don't know, but I just know that we're wrong in some way.
They're not singing. They're singing a song from 2020 or 2021 that obviously samples the ABBA song intensely, but I think that they wouldn't know the ABBA song.
We need a Googling on this.
We're going to cross now to Benny and Bjorn.
Hey, friends of the pod.
Hey, you're the closest we've got to Benny and Bjorn. Did you have something on this?
That's true. I'm full Bjorn. I do have a beard and mustache in lockdown. So what disappoints me most about it is that I feel like the players are sending a message to the AFL and to the public, which frankly I don't like, which is that they're supportive of a night grand final. Because I believe that the players have been changing the lyrics to say, give me a flag after midnight rather than a man after midnight. And that, I mean, you know, the way that the game dragged on, the medal ceremony dragged on, it felt like to me that the flag wouldn't be presented until after midnight at the rate at which Basil was dragging things out. And if that's the message that the players are trying to send, that they're endorsing a night grand final, I just want to put it on the record that I'm opposed, deeply opposed to it.
Alicia, do you have any update for us there? You are our musical correspondent.
Oh, I was just in the world of ABBA and then, like Kate said, got into Madonna land, and I didn't even know what Gimme 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 was because I'm such a non-pop person. And, yes, there is a man at the midnight.
Yeah, I think we're all aware there was a man after midnight, but I was shocked that they all wanted him. That was my only surprise. But, you know, I'm so here for it.
Maybe they want someone else on the bench.
I feel like this all comes back to Gil. I feel like this has been Gil's making. Gil's doing, like, he's
subliminal messaging, yeah, or something.
Yeah, like in the plot of Zoolander, that what we're hearing is it's being piped in and eventually we'll all come on board with it.
This is very QAnon. This is very QAnon now, this pod.
You know what else? I've been a long-standing, I mean, I hate ABBA, but I'm also on the record of saying that I hate third quarters. And I think this one may have won me over. I've just watched that third quarter over and over again because I can't work out. It's like a trick of the eye. I don't know how they do it. And I don't know how they get 16. I'm watching it. It's like when my mum's watching cricket and whenever they replay getting a wicket, she goes, oh, we got another one. And then my dad goes, no, it's a replay, Elan. And I feel like I'm watching that in the third and start of the fourth, where I'm like, didn't we just see this? And then it happens again.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Chelsea Randall and you're listening to The Outer Sanctum.
Shelley, how do you feel about the I'm putting you on the spot here because I know exactly how you feel about it. Because of social media now, we see all the carry on after the game. We see so much. Do we see too much, Shelley?
Yeah, I'm not really interested in seeing a lot of that. I don't think it's for the public eye. I think it's their private business, and I think that we can celebrate and enjoy. But what I've been seeing at nightclubs, I don't know if I'm an old prude or whatever it is, but I just don't need to see people on each other's shoulders with their tongues hanging out and hands up in the air shaking it all about. I can do that in my own time. I don't need to see other people doing
it. Yeah, you have to just endure that on the group chat. And that's just Rana.
And I feel like it works for me on a very personal level. But I have to agree, when I watch these players on the field, you think they're these heroes, I guess, who can tackle anything, and they're giants in my mind. And then you see them on the dance floor and they kind of...
Oh, they're no triple threat.
And no, you realise how young they all are, that they're just tiny little boys.
Nicole, did you stay awake till the very end?
I am very proud to say that I did. I'm not going to say I stayed up much afterwards, but I did see a whole game. And I wasn't feeling confident about that around 2 o'clock. So I had a little nap and turns out that was all it took. I have to say, I think what's been really fun for me, or what's interesting, is I have Dee's supporters very close to me. And so I say this with all love and affection, but they're kind of the Eeyore of the football world. Like, you know, that resigned defeatism. It's pretty powerful, that. And I think it's such a big part of their identity. And I'm just wondering what they're going to do going forward. They have to reinvent themselves. They're not going to get away with it anymore. And you think of someone like, you know, the Titus O'Reilly, whose entire career, his comedy career, is based on the fact that Melbourne are more than likely going to disappoint. So I'm seeing a lot of midlife crises in the near future for these D supporters. So I'm interested to see what happens next for them.
Yeah, it's a rewriting. The Tigers have rewritten it. Now our eyes have, of course, turn to St Kilda. I think what we will see is a lot more teams playing this style of footy. For so many years, we saw this really defensive, quite boring game. And now what we've got on the agenda is something that I think looks a lot more like basketball. And maybe that's because we've got so many basketballers in the centre at the start of all of the bounces. But we're seeing so many more stoppages turning into goals. We're seeing people being encouraged to be themselves and to play their game rather than fit into a structure or a system. We're seeing systems and structures be created around the individuals who are there. And I thought that that was a real highlight of this game. And I thought it was a real highlight after the game too. I was so shocked at just how composed Max Gawn was. He just loping, just calm. He played the captain's role so well, I thought. And then even, you know, when we saw our son, Ben Brown, on being interviewed, we did adopt him halfway through the game. We all felt like we were his mums, collective mums. And when we saw him being interviewed, you know, he was just in his own skin. He was being himself and he wasn't, you know, trying on anything else. And I thought there was just such a beautiful power in that. Did anyone else have a reaction to that feeling?
Yeah, I did. Ben sat and joined the media immediately. You know, everyone else was running around and they were getting their photos, selfies, family, you know, fairies were being made in the confetti, and it was just all of that excitement. But he had that composure where he sat and talked to them and they wanted to speak to him and they said, we could keep you here all day. And in fact, they probably could have. He's such a generous, kind man. And I felt like he was very calm, his true self, and he just spoke with such pride and just such, you know, calm. And that's what we also saw on the footy field. He was ready for this, you know. He was told last year, no spot for you, look elsewhere, explore other options. Look what he explored and look what happened. Now he's a premiership player.
Oh, we were all very proud mums of Ben Brown. But speaking of being a mother, and I felt like I felt a mother's disappointment when I noticed that after the game, the Melbourne players were basically trolling the Bulldogs with the song that they sang in the centre after everybody left the stadium. It's tradition, the players go back to the middle of the ground and they sing their song and they have their moment when once everybody has left, and the Melbourne team did that. And then they sang Free From Desire, which is what the Bulldogs posted after they won their prelim. And I felt really disappointed. I wanted to waggle my finger at that team and say, you've just won a premiership. That is not nice.
Yeah, I think it's salty, I think, is what the young people would call it. And it goes back to what Emma was saying before about, I don't actually have a problem with them doing that. I think that as a team, this is what happens after you win a final. You get to do this bonding stuff. It's the filming of it and the posting of it that I think is a bit more mean-spirited. And do we need to see that? Do the Bulldogs need to see that? I think that that is what is quite antagonizing, and maybe they're trying to create now a rivalry for going forward between the two clubs, but it does seem unnecessary to be really rubbing it in their face like that.
Yeah, I think I think it's really interesting the way this is all playing out, because so much about it is, you know, this extra access to players and seeing things that we never used to see, really, unless you're, you know, a part of the inner sanctum. Sorry, I say inner sanctum, I always have a giggle there. Unless you're part of the inner sanctum. Thanks, Emma. But yeah, ordinarily you wouldn't see that. And so, and they're constantly trying to find that balance between humanizing the players, showing them as real, fully rounded human beings. But also the downside of that is you realize that they are fully rounded human beings, which means we also see the bad or the not so positive, the feet of clay, and which obviously we saw on the dance floor. I don't think they've got that balance right. I think they're really struggling with that, and the players themselves are sometimes in control of those images and sometimes they're not. That's the power of social media and the power of the phone that is its own little camera and media kind of outlet, is that this stuff gets out whether they want it to or not.
Just like an out-of-sanctum after party.
I agree, Nicole. I feel like there was nothing we saw that wasn't okay. It's like, you know, it's completely fine. What we saw was at that 3 o'clock in the morning moment where you go home or you stay for whatever you want to do. And at 3 o'clock, I usually leave because I'm not interested about what happens after 3 o'clock. And we're seeing things that are happening after 3 o'clock in the morning, and they're not maybe sometimes getting a choice of what goes out there. So I think you're right. Maybe phones in a bucket on their way in.
I think one of the things that we can't lose sight of, and I am playing devil's advocate here, is that in these COVID times, they probably wanted to give access to the people who were supporting from home as much as they possibly could. And I don't know if they would have necessarily had a strategy around it. In a lot of cases, it wasn't the players who had just finished playing. It wasn't their phones. It was the phones of the people who were in the squad who had them on them at the time. And so, look, I think it's probably the genie's a bit out of the bottle and they're going to have to rethink it going forward. But I don't feel like we have – I think mostly we see formal settings after the game where it's a controlled environment. Maybe mobile phones are still in a bucket. There's obviously been opportunities, and there's been times when, you know, formerly Richmond players have got in trouble for inappropriate photos and things that have leaked. The other thing that I would say is that I don't know if this free from desire moment really is as salty as we are making it out to be. Maybe all the team, we don't know if Gimme Gimme is from ABBA. So what would we know about the context of whether this has been something that they've been playing, and maybe the Bulldogs, you know, had a bite first. Who knows? I think we need to be open and forgiving to the fact that these are pretty unprecedented circumstances, but I do like to see good behaviour. Again, I will say I was very shocked to see the coach on the shoulders of the captain, but I kind of loved it. Like, I was totally there for it. I think Simon Goodwin is really enjoying himself, and I think that's really rare as a coach. I'm happy to see it. Felicity and Tess Armstrong can't be with us today, so Tess has recorded this Telegram treat for your listening enjoyment.
Hi, Sanctum friends. It's Tess here, just settling into that post-grand final footy grief period where I realise I don't have a lot else to talk about. Like, my personality is quite a lot about football, so these months I do some real soul-searching before AFLW kicks off. Well, the grand final highlight for me, if it wasn't the Auskick kids frolicking in that confetti after the game, which seemed just the most fun I've ever seen anyone have on telly, it's Adam Treloar and Ben Brown showing that second chances are so meaningful, taking their moment in a grand final and absolutely blitzing it on the biggest stage. Couldn't be happier for them, and it made my footy romantic heart sing. And I was thinking about my season highlight, and really a lot of it was a blur for me. The whole year has been a bit of a blur, but really that plays into my highlight because it was more the vibe of the thing. It felt to me like the beginning of a new footy era. A couple of years back, like 3 or 4 years ago, we had this, at the same time, huge collection of players, like iconic players, retire all at the same time. It was Bob Murphy and Joe Watson and Stevie J, Hiretti Lumumba, Luke Hodge, Nick Riewoldt. It was just this huge class of players all retired at the same time, and it felt really end of era stuff. And for a few years, I feel like we haven't really kicked off again. And this year just felt like a new beginning. And we had those young Bombers who were just super fun to watch. And I feel like they're a real threat. Errol at the Swans. I mean, the Swans themselves, absolutely magnificent. Frio and Caleb Sarong, all rewriting their club and just refreshing, putting reset button on where their clubs were at and away they went.
Bailey Smith and Aaron Norton rocking the Dogs forward line with just excellent hair and such youthful energy, which I've forgotten what that felt like until I see them. Sam Walsh in the Brownlow count and Melbourne's new generation putting their demons behind them and winning that flag finally. I feel like the next few years are going to be fun. I've got something for you to watch. In the off-season, I'm going to be watching the movements at Melbourne very closely because Sir Swamp Thing has reminded us of this incredible statistic where no VFL or AFL Grand Final winning lineup have ever played together in the same team again. There's always been at least one player missing. So the case of the missing demon is going to keep me occupied until next year. Who will it be?
Are we all ready if I come around and ask you for highlights of the entire season? This will be our last Melee pod for 2021, the year that has gone for 2.5 decades. It's hard to think back on what some of the highlights have been. I will remind you that this was the season we said goodbye to Eddie Betts and Sean Burgoyne, where Port really fired, where Sydney were on fire for so much of the season, where people were packing up and moving into hubs again and families were being asked to do the impossible, where for a very long period of time, Victoria was the only place that football could be played, which right now seems surreal. Is anyone ready to give me a highlight for the AFLM season or just for 2021? Lucy?
Yeah, look, in a year of social distancing, I've got to say, I did love those players who ended up in the crowd. You remember very early on, Tom Papley ended up sitting in the front row. I love going back and seeing those things. And I think that's why I love watching the Brownlow, because you get a bit of a recap of the season that was. But for me, it was footy as entertainment. It was the comebacks. There was close games. I haven't really gone and looked at the statistics on this, but it feels like there were more draws than normal, and really the changing of the guard. And for me, the club that really epitomised that was the Swans, just to see how well they did and the fact that they got to play finals. And a little shout out to my team, Hawthorn, who by the end of the season, I was really enjoying watching those games, and just would like to remind everybody that we drew with Melbourne.
Fair play, Nicole.
I'm going to be a little parochial, and I can't go past Sean Burgoyne's 400th game. I mean, to be fifth in all-time player to hit that 400 is extraordinary in and of itself, the first Indigenous man as well. But when you think about where he was in, you know, 2009, 2010 when he came to Hawthorn, and so to do it across two clubs, to win four premierships and to be changing clubs, moving states at what looked like the end of his career, and then to just bang on another 11 years. I don't know that we'll get to see that again, to be honest. But obviously, it's a real credit to himself and to his team and the way it was managed at Hawthorn. And I don't doubt there was some luck in there as well. But what an incredible spirit, what an incredible tribute to that man, that his character, to be able to carry the weight of that and to finish out this season, maybe not the best way possible, but in terms of the result, but certainly to be a role model to so many, and probably the likes of which we're not going to see again for a while.
You say carry the weight of that, and it always paints a picture in my mind of Amy Burgoyne saying, "Sean, can you help me lift this couch?" And him saying, "No, because I've got to play tomorrow and I'm not putting my body on the line for moving furniture." And I think about how the families are impacted at every turn of the dial. Julia, what was your highlight for the season?
Well, look, I'm a long-suffering Carlton supporter, Shelley, both are. And so for me, the thing I hope that Carlton learn from this year is the be yourself, back yourself narrative that we've seen. You know, we've already spoken about the transformation of Simon Goodwin, the Kate Roffey's talking about that, backing him in, giving him his belief in himself and his systems. They got amazing support around him so that he could be himself. And I feel like with Carlton, we've just had this era of rolling coaches, turning over coaches and not backing them in and not supporting them and being so short-sighted, and if they don't give us a premiership in 2 years, we turf them. And Carlton have a very talented list, and I would love to see us deal with the fact that they might not be brilliant next year, but just let the system play out, like let it happen. And I hope that my club is watching what happened at Melbourne and saying it's okay. Melbourne was 17th a few years ago and they just won a premiership. That's what it takes. So Michael Voss is the new coach of my club and I would love to see them back him in and just believe that it takes time. And I think that we've learnt that over the last few years that you need to believe in the coach. That was the same with Hardwick, that they backed him in even with when the times were tough at Richmond. So that's what I'm taking from this year.
Lovely. Alicia?
Well, I just want to circle back just to say that I'm in love with the way Julia says Carlton. I'm going to turn it into a poem. Say it again.
Carlton.
Oh. a highlight for me.
It's very John
Elliott-esque. I'm so sincere. Right, I'm going to write a poem about you, Julia. I'd love, obviously, to say about Burgoyne and, of course, Eddie Betts, 350 games, 640 goals. It just killed me. But I want to go to a really strange moment, and that was round one on Adelaide Oval where Adelaide debutant James Rowe got his first goal. What was really exciting, this was against Geelong, is that James is the son of Stephen Rowe, who used to play for Adelaide as well, and he was commenting on a radio station. He's like, "Oh, you good boy." And I thought that was just so much like Jessica Fox winning her gold medal in the C1's slalom canoeing event. Her dad, Richard Fox, is like, "Oh, well done. She's a very good person." And we all just, you know, and there's James going, "Oh, good boy. He's such a good boy." I just think it's beautiful. It sums up footy for me. But listening to you guys all year was a highlight too.
Oh, bless you. Thanks, Alicia. What about you, Katie?
I'm going to be pretty parochial and say something that's a bit one-eyed, but that links to what Julia was talking about. So for me as a Hawthorn supporter, there wasn't a lot to celebrate this year, particularly in the sort of first half of the year, apart from, you know, a couple of early pretty exciting wins against Essendon and then a comeback against Adelaide, which was fabulous. But then we really dipped and it felt like a long season, particularly in lockdown. But what I realised as the season progressed and as we sort of started to come good and we won a few games towards the end is that actually I almost enjoy watching footy the most when my team's a bit down and out and I can start to see little green shoots of promise emerging and some young players that have potential and I can kind of dream about what the next few years might hold and whether or not that ends up coming to fruition is a different question. But I do love footy when it's like that. And often I think, you know, the most joyous time that I've ever watched footy was sort of 2006, 2007 when Hawthorn started to come good after a long time in the wilderness. And so that was really joyful for me. And to come back to what Julia said, it has made me think about how overjoyed Melbourne supporters are. And there was a tweet that Titus O'Reilly did that summed this up. He said, "It's all been worth it, all of it." And I think that's at the heart of footy, you know, when all those years when Melbourne really was down and out and really struggled, the idea that it's kind of worth it because you end up getting this payoff, even if it's decades in the making, is beautiful. And one thing we didn't mention was that Viney was interviewed on the ground in the immediate aftermath of the game. And I was really moved by what he said because he said, you know, "I remember with this club when I was drafted, my first game we were beaten by 80 points. My second game we were beaten by 150 points. People threw stuff at us and here we are." And it was just great, you know. I mean, not that they had been through that and certainly not that they'd had fans throw things at them, but that the team persisted and they really did it the hard way and the fans did it the hard way. And I actually love footy when it's like that. So for me, I go into next season with a lot of hope about my own team and actually it's enjoyable when it's like that.
Shelley?
So for me, it's been the high-flying marks. The return of the high-flying marks has been very, very exciting. We've seen the ball move a lot faster this year and I think that's been because of the standard, which has contributed to people actually kicking into contested marks a lot more in that one-on-one. And we're seeing people flying up in the air and it's just been spectacular. And that's where we got, you know, the Jezalenko kind of scream, you know. So it was so nice to see Shea Bolton win, you know, Mark of the Year this year. It was just spectacular. So I've loved the return of the high-flying mark.
Great nomination. Rana, do we even... We're coming to you. I mean, it took you 57 years to get here. What's your highlight?
I mean, look, I would love to keep talking about a premiership win as my highlight, but I won't. I suppose for me, I'm so glad you mentioned the stand rule, Shelley, because we've taken to just yelling out, stand. Anyone has to freeze or do something in our house, we've adopted that. I'm going to do a bit of a top and tail. My highlight is both round one and round 23, because round one was my last game as a Richmond employee, but also my first game back at the footy and at men's footy, and in a crowd of 50,000 people, and it was just so weird but amazing, and it felt like things were going to go back to normal, and it was a really wonderful feeling. So I loved that, and it just felt like being back at the G was everything for me, and I miss it so much. But then round 23, Lucy, you talked about draws and close games, and round 23 gave us every single one of those outcomes in one round. And you'll remember results, who was going to play in finals, coming down to percentages in that round. It was just the best weekend of football. So that was probably my highlight of the season, I reckon.
Very good nomination. My nomination is going to be super, super parochial, so parochial that you want to scratch your eyes out. But my highlight for this AFLM season has been the tenacity of us, the Outer Sanctum. It's been the sisterhood of football. It's been seeing so many more people who look and sound like us having conversations that look and sound like the conversations we have. While the work is still hard, I feel like we've got an army of people behind us and above us. And I feel like the conversation has changed. So in a year where I didn't think it could get much tougher than last year's lockdown, this year's lockdown has really knocked us all for more than a six. And I can't believe that we are 10 strong at this point of the game, that we declared our independence, and that I have seen each one of you grow beyond what I think we ever anticipated was possible when we first came together as a group. And I am beyond proud to be friends with you and to be colleagues with you, and we are each other's ride or dies. When an earthquake happened, this was the group that I went to first. You gave me the best information and you gave me the best memes, as always. And the love is so strong, so real. And the fact that we're now primed and ready to go into an AFLW season that we can make our own, I'm really excited about what we can achieve together. And when I say together, I mean with our listeners, because they came across with us. And that was a really scary moment. We jumped off a cliff, and in the words of Simon Goodwin, we just decided it was time for us to be ourselves. It's time for us to get out of here. We're going to take a little break between now and the AFLW season. We'll still be dropping one pod a week. It'll be a fifth quarter style chat, and we hope that you'll stick with us. But we'll be back with an absolute vengeance when it's time for AFLW, which at the moment looks like AFLW will start on the 8th of January. But of course, we are all beholden to this awful pandemic, and so you'll need to be following us on socials to get the updates, or at least downloading the fifth quarter. If something of enormous significance happens, there's no reason why we couldn't get together in melee, but I think we're going to take this time just to regroup, and we'll be dropping one episode of the fifth quarter a week. We're so grateful to all of you for following us. There's only one thing really left for us to say.
Go footy!
This is my poem, Dear AFL Grand Final. Twice. This is twice you've been away from Melbourne, and twice we'll be watching from the cold, long arms of the overworn and fraying couch in yet another lockdown. Without friends who will come to our barbecues just for the chance to see our faces while our team loses by only a few points. Without family to celebrate the way we jump up and down and scream at the TV while we hold on to the tongs in our hands. Without scanning the room for confirmation of ball. Without gently holding onto someone's shoulder saying, I think we've got this. Without neighbours who will pop in just for a casual few. Without the thrill and buzz of thunderous backyard celebrations heard over fence, over fence, over fence, over fence. We know we're not alone, as so many other places are doing this tough too. Some are alone or not where they want to be, or stuck with the smallest of TVs. And thank the football heavens, we don't need a special antenna. but it's still hard for some. AFL Grand Final. You'll get to run out onto Perth Stadium on proud Noongar ground in front of 25,000 eager fans shouting at the top of their lungs. Melbourne Football Club v Western Bulldogs. What a show. Take it all in. Breathe the fine footy air. Have a pie or a veggie spread for all of us. Get out the rugs, the flags, the banners and the handmade signs that will declare Gorn is here to stay or Bonty is king. The crowd will be hungry, starving for good play from the centre bounce. The roar will shudder and rumble everyone out of their seat. Stand and let the air rush by you on the wing. Let your hair swing free. Not since 1954 have these two met like this, and D's with a drought of 57 years. Go Petrarca, Oliver, Pickett, Viney. Go McRae, Norton, Liberatore, Smith. This year the world threw us so many curveballs and earthquakes as well. This grand final is definitely going to shake things up. D's versus Dogs. The universe has given us something to cheer for.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.